I didn't plan reading out the subtitle because that actually tells you what whether result or something about result. But I do want to tell you that I'm going to talk about finding a holographic dual for creative complexity. This is work I've been doing together with Eliezer Rabinovich, Adrian Sanchez-Garrido, and Julian Zoner. And this talk is based on a body of work, which we've been doing in the last couple of years on creative complexity. The main thing I want to focus on is the first paper here, but the information comes from all of these other works, and also a paper with Jose Barbón and Ritam Sina together with Eliezer. So the plan is simple. We will have some motivation. Why complexity? Which notion of complexity? We will then zoom in onto Krylov complexity, and then we will show you how we can find a holographic dual for Krylov complexity in a particular setup. Finally, we will have open questions and some future directions. So, always good to start with a puzzle, and this is a puzzle in the holographic dictionary. So, for a while now, it has been recognized that new, possibly unknown, observables should be added to the holographic dictionary. And in particular, certain observables in the bulk seem to continue evolving in boundary time long after known observables on the boundary cease to change. And when I say cease to change, they cease to change at timescales, observabilization timescales. So the question is, what could be a corresponding observable in the boundary? And an answer Susskind has been giving since 2014 was quantum complexity. So before we start studying quantum complexity, let's ask ourselves what would be the general time dependent profile of complexity. And from general bulk and boundary considerations, the time-dependent profile has the following form. The main thing to notice is the time scales, and as you can see, the time scales at which complexity saturates are of order the Hilbert space dimension, and the values are also of order the Hilbert space dimension. If you were talking about operators, you also have a nonlinear growth at the beginning, and a generic feature is a very long linear growth for very long timescales. You then are expecting to have some kind of saturations, and then you also should have some Poincaré recurrences, which are out of the timescale of this talk. So, during the years, people proposed different notions of quantum complexity. And the first one, borrowed from quantum computing, goes as follows. It's called circuit complexity. And you can think of it as it is essentially the minimal number of local gates you would need in order to construct an operator U, starting from an initial operator U naught. And since these gates are discrete, you are not expecting to get exactly to U. So you set yourself some success parameter or tolerance parameter, epsilon. Then if you don't like tolerance parameter, you can define geometric complexity, where you need to choose a penalty metric on the space of unitaries and define complexity as the shortest path to reach U from U naught. So these two definitions seem to have some choices. You have to make some choices in order to use them. And let me, in this talk, let me talk about Krylov complexity, where essentially all you need is the system's Hamiltonian and an initial state of operator, and it essentially does everything for you. So the main question is, could we find a precise bulk boundary correspondence for any notion of complexity? And in this talk, we will focus on Krylov complexity. So let's start from the basics. The basics are the Krylov space, and consider an operator O evolving in time under a Hamiltonian H. as you can see, this is the evolution in the Heisenberg picture, and the, using the Baker-Campbell-Hausdorff formula, you can write the time evolution as a linear combination of elements in the Krylov space. The Krylov space is spanned by the operator and nested commutators with the Hamiltonian. And in order to make notation simpler and later to connect with Krylov complexity for states, let's describe this commutator via a Liouvillean superoperator, and then these commutators just become the action of the Liouvillean on the operator. What is the Krylov space dimension? So let's say our Hilbert space has dimension d, our operator space dimension has dimension d squared. By the way, s is the number of degrees of freedom. Operator space dimension. And the upper bound, this upper bound is saturated for a dense operator, which has non-zero projection and every eigenstate of the Liouvillean. As well, another condition is that there are no degeneracies in the spectrum of the Liouvillean, except for the usual default degeneracy. We normalize the initial operator, and then we act iteratively with the Liouvillean and project out all the previous directions we constructed. And at every step, we normalize the operator and define a coefficient, which we call the Lanczos coefficients. And you can go on and do it again and again. And finally, the output is the Krylov chain, which is an ordered orthonormal set of operators, and the Lanczos sequence, which are a set of numbers. Okay, and here K is the Krylov space dimension. So how does an operator evolve on the Krylov chain? So of course you can expand it in the Krylov basis, where the coefficients are wave functions, which are nothing but the projection of each Krylov element on the time-dependent operator. The Liouvillean has a tri-diagonal form in the Krylov basis, and for the sake of defining Krylov complexity, let's define a position operator over the Krylov basis as follows. So what is Krylov complexity? It is defined as the expectation value of position over the Krylov basis. It was defined in this paper by Parker et al. It is bounded by definition by the Krylov space dimension, which, by the way, can be infinite. So again, as I said, it was introduced in this paper by Parker to study operator growth in the thermodynamic limit, and we then advocated for it to be a measure of operator complexity at all timescales for finite systems. So we don't have time, so let me summarize the dynamics of Krylov complexity, and it turns out that for a chaotic system, the Lanczos coefficients grow linearly. At first, the wave functions spread very fast, and Krylov complexity grows exponentially fast. We then show that if the system is finite, these Lanczos coefficients plateau at some point, actually when n becomes of order s, and then Krylov complexity starts to grow linearly, and you can see here the wave functions. I plotted three of them at equal time differences, and you see the peaks are linearly apart. And finally, we know Krylov complexity should saturate, but when we actually performed some large-scale numerics, we found that the Lanczos coefficients show a descent, and I'm going to show you those numerical results. The wave function essentially is spread out over the Krylov basis, and that's a way to understand the saturation. So, numerical results. So we chose to work in the SYK4 setup of L complex fermions. They satisfy anti-commutation relations, and the coupling constants are taken from some distribution with zero mean and a particular variance. And the operator we took to be some local operator, which was shown in this paper to satisfy the eigenstate thermalization hypotheses. And in particular, it is a dense operator over the energy basis. So the first thing is what we got from our numerics, and we had to do very large scale numerics, even for 10 complex fermions. We had to compute like something like more than 60,000 Krylov elements. We did that in large computer clusters. And as you can see, if you just compute the first Lanczos coefficients, you do see some kind of linear growth, and you do see some kind of saturation, a plateau. But if you keep on working hard, or let your computer work hard, you find this this descent in the Lanczos coefficients. Okay. So this descent is really you could think of it as a non-perturbative slope. It's a very, very small slope. It goes like e to the minus 2s or 1 over the Krylov space dimension. The numerical results for K complexity, not for the Lanczos coefficient, this is K complexity, so here this is time and this is the complexity, show a nonlinear growth at early times, which then becomes a linear growth. And then finally, K complexity saturates at time scales of order the Krylov space dimension, which I remind you is of order the dimension of the Hilbert space of operators, and at a value of order the Krylov space dimension over 2. We can also define K entropy, and it measures the amount of disorder in the wave function. And it also has some interesting features, as you can see, at late time scales of order Krylov space dimension, the entropy saturates and the wave function essentially completely spread out. Okay, you can also look at integrable systems, such as XXZ, which you've heard of in this conference. And it turns out that some kind of Anderson localization on the Krylov chain causes the Krylov complexity to saturate at lower values than the SYK case. And also here we had to do, we did very, very large scale numerics. Okay, you can also define a Krylov complexity for states where everywhere you've seen earlier a Liouvillean, you can change it with a Hamiltonian. And you also should change, previously you had ILT, now you have minus I. The Lanczos algorithm provides the Krylov basis and Lanczos coefficients, and the Hamiltonian is tridiagonal. In certain cases, it is exactly like in the Liouvillean case, where the diagonal elements are zero, and you only have Lanczos coefficients on the off diagonal. And this was studied, Krylov state complexity was studied in this paper. So now I will be able to tell you about a holographic dual for Krylov complexity. And for that, let's start with the boundary. The boundary will be double-scaled SYK. And it was studied in these two very nice papers by Berkouz et al. And in the limit where n goes to infinity, p goes to infinity, and lambda fixed, the ensemble average effective Hamiltonian was shown to have this form. And you've already seen earlier a tridiagonal Hamiltonian. And indeed, there is a relationship to the Krylov basis and Lanczos coefficients. And in particular, we showed that Hamiltonian is essentially written in a Krylov basis for the SYK Hamiltonian with an initial state, which is the infinite temperature turbofield state. And the Lanczos coefficients are indeed what you've seen on the off diagonal. And Krylov complexity is, as before, just the expectation value on the Krylov chain. Okay, so double scaled SYK is nice, but it's not directly related to gravity. But it is related in the triple scaling limit. And to do that, start with double scaled SYK and define a position variable, a new position variable by just multiplying lambda by n, where n, again, you can think of it as a position on the Krylov chain. You then can perform the triple scaling limit. So you take lambda goes to 0, L goes to infinity, and you keep this ratio fixed, which gives you a renormalized length, L tilde, which is just L minus 2 log 1 over 2 lambda. And you take the limit properly, and you can find the triple scaled Hamiltonian, which has the following form. So there's a zero energy, and then a kind of Liouville form for the Hamiltonian. And in the triple scaled limit of SYK, we take, what happens is we start with, this is the density of states of double scaled SYK. We take the limit, lambda goes, we take lambda to be small, which gives this distribution kind of long tails. And then we focus on the ground state energy. So we zoom in to the ground state energy, where we recognize the density of states to be this cinch, to have this cinch behavior, which we recognize to be the Schwarzschild density of states, which relates double-scaled SYK in the triple-scaled limit to JT gravity. Okay, so what would K complexity in the triple-scaled limit of SYK be? So what you need to do, so let's recall that we defined this position operator L equals lambda n, and therefore Krylov complexity is the expectation value of L over lambda. In a triple scale limit, instead of using L, we use the renormalized length. And what we can do is use that the Hamiltonian I showed you earlier, the Liouville Hamiltonian for triple scale SYK, and solve the expectation value classically with some particular initial conditions. And we get this result. So keep this result in mind. And now, okay, let me also write it in terms of the energy of the solution. So I've just, instead of writing it in terms of the initial condition, I'm writing it in terms of the energy. And let's now, so we've now done the boundary. Let's now jump into the bulk. The bulk will be JT gravity. And I'll just remind you what the action looks like. So this is the action. It involves a metric and a dilaton field. We set some boundary conditions. So we set the metric and the boundary to be one-dimensional and describe time. And we set some value for the dilaton on the boundary. And the equations of motion, the first one tells us that the geometry of space-time is ADS2. And the second one is just the equation of motion for the dilaton. OK, so we are ready to compute another thing in JT gravity. In particular, it will be the Einstein-Rosen bridge length. So here I plotted ADS2 embedded in three dimensions. And you can put some global coordinates on it, which cover the whole space. And this is the solution for the dilaton. You can also define Schwarzschild coordinates, which have a horizon and essentially describe accelerating observers moving on the boundary. The blue lines are the boundary, by the way. And Schwarzschild coordinates also give you the time on the boundary. Finally, the wormhole length is the geodesic distance between two points on the boundary. And we use the relationship between the Schwarzschild and global coordinates to determine the time on the boundary, and then we can write the wormhole length in terms of the boundary time. And you can notice that this term here is divergent when we take the boundary to infinity, so when we take epsilon to zero. So let's define the renormalized wormhole length in the following way. So we just remove that infinite term. Okay, and we can also write it in terms of the energy and the boundary. So what we find is that Krylov complexity in triple-scaled SYK has the following form in terms of the energy on the energy of the solution, and the wormhole length in JT gravity has this form, and you can now compare the two, and you can perform some identification of parameters and see that they are essentially the same thing. So let me arrive at the summary. And the result we found is that the Krylov basis in triple scaled SYK is nothing but the wormhole length in JT gravity. And Krylov complexity in triple-scaled SYK is essentially the wormhole length in JT gravity. And finally, we can ask some questions. And the questions can be, for example, what happens when we include... So our solutions were classical, and you can ask what happens when you add quantum corrections. What happens when you go away from the small lambda limit? So we've been working, for DSSYK in the small lambda limit. And how can we find saturation of K complexity? Maybe that would involve higher order genus expansion. And the Krylov basis with operators could be more interesting even. And the question would be, what would be the precise geometric interpretations of operator insertion in double scaled SYK? And finally, of course, the big question is, what happens for higher dimensional gravity? So thank you very much. That's what I wanted to say.
Thank you. I'm just curious about the saturation. Is that something that by working harder you'll see on the SYK side, or?
On the SYK side, not in the double scaled SYK limit directly, because that is already in the thermodynamic limit, right? You take L, okay. N and P to infinity. So not directly over there.
Okay.
But on the JT gravity side, maybe. Using, as I said, a higher order.
I think I'm forgetting all of the authors, but Mark Mazet and Gabor Sarosi and another author who I'm forgetting, I think they claim to see saturation of the wormhole length.
Of the wormhole length. Yeah, it should be very similar. Yes,
right,
indeed,
right,
indeed.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
Right. Exactly.
Okay, that's interesting. Thank you.
There's another question up there.
Yeah. Well, just a comment about the saturation. There is a possibility to give an argument for a universal saturation just from the density of states of the theory. So when the density of states is compact, like for example in I don't know, a Gaussian matrix model or in SYK, there is a way to provide. To prove this descent of the Lanczos coefficients and to prove the saturation. So, yeah.
Yeah. Great.
Questions on Zoom? Okay, if not, then let's thank Ruth again.